with that fanfare, that means it's time for our weekly trip to the movies with our in-house movie reviewer, Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
This week's movie, of course, is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
So this takes place a couple centuries after the death of Caesar. So if you are familiar with the reboot of the franchise, which started about 12 years ago with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, War of the Planet of the Apes, all these things, which use what is called motion capture technology acting. So that is, you know, Andy Serkis kind of perfected that in The Lord of the Rings as Smeagol. What they do is they film the actors, and then they put the CGI ape stuff over them in post-production. So that's what they've been doing. It's different from, you know, you and I, Craig, are similar age. We grew up watching the Charlton Heston ape movies where actors were in ape makeup. And what John Chambers achieved with that ape makeup in 1968 is still phenomenal. Kim Hunter, Roddy McDowall, Maurice Evans in heavy ape makeup, which was phenomenal for the time. Now, it's less costly to do it this way with the motion capture technology acting.
It is amazing technology.
It's amazing. And let me just say that the VFX stuff in this is great. I mean, the detail on the main characters. So Owen Teague plays Noah. He's this ape that we kind of follow through this movie, and I'll get to the plot in a minute. But the detail on the fur, the eyes, is stunning. It is just amazing, Craig. And I think at some point one of these apes movies is going to win a visual effects Oscar. But the detail is stunning. It's like you're really watching a human being inside an ape costume, even though that's not quite what's going on. So I give the VFX people and the motion capture technology acting people high marks for this film. And that's really the key to these movies is the special effects.
And the VFX stands for virtual effects, correct?
Right. This is now a couple centuries after Caesar has died. And you remember Caesar from the films that when we were a kid, you know, he's the one that got transported to like 1972 United States. He could talk. And that's how the apes began to talk. So now in these reboots, you know, he's kind of the king. He's the one that wants to live with humans peacefully. Of course, there's always the gorillas that don't want to live with the humans peacefully. So now this is a few centuries after Caesar, and the apes now live kind of in clans, and they're scavengers, and there's little clans, and they're not really a united world. But there's another ape in the film played by Kevin Durand. He plays Proxima Caesar, and he's a bigger ape, and he wants to access human technology. That's kind of the key plot line. So Noah, played by Owen Teague, is this young ape who kind of lives with his family, and then, you know, all heck breaks loose. I won't tell you what's going on, but there's obviously something that happens that forces him on the run. He encounters a human on the way, played by Freya Allen. She plays this feral human who can talk, and her name is Nova. And if you remember from the first movie, Charlton Heston's girlfriend is Nova. So there's a nod to that 1968 masterpiece.
Some of the
music is similar to that Jerry Goldsmith score that we all remember. Kind of the visuals as they're on the beaches. It looks like that first film. It's a nod to that first film. Her character named Nova, played by Linda Harrison in the original, is a nod to that first film. So they keep going back to the genesis of the great Franklin Schaffner-directed movie in 1968. So she's this human that can talk. The apes are stunned that she can talk because humans have been living basically a feral lifestyle since Caesar has died. So that's the plot. And Proxima Caesar wants to access human technology. And Noah is this ape. He kind of reminds me of Caesar. He's the good ape. He's trying to do the right thing. He kind of befriends Nova. He sees the humans as not dangerous. And that's the conflict in the movie. So there's a lot of big set pieces, a lot of big action sequences involving rivers and fires and fights and things like that. William H. Macy has a cameo. So that's essentially where we are. And this film will set up further sequels. I won't tell you what happens, of course. We don't want to give plots away on this show, but it's going to set up further sequels with more humans coming in. That's how I kind of see it. So I like this movie for the most part. I think it's very similar to the other three, which were all really good. I think it's a little too long, and it's a little confusing. The first 20 minutes, you're kind of juggling balls like, who are these characters? What ape is this? Is this an ape I already saw? So it's a little tricky, but if you focus on Noah as the main character played by Owen Teague, you'll be okay. But I think the plot's a little confusing, It's a little too long, but overall, this is a solid addition to now, I think, the ninth Ape film we've had. I think we're up to nine now. We kind of don't count the Tim Burton film with Mark Wahlberg, which was so bad. But I liked it a lot. It made $58 million at the box office, which proves if you've got a franchise, you can make money. And The Fall Guy did not have a franchise and only made $28 million its first weekend despite huge stars. So the lesson here for Hollywood, again, is franchises make money. Original stories like The Fall Guy, which was based on a TV show, they're a trickier sell. They're a trickier sell for audiences. So this is going to set up more sequels. Wes Ball, the director, deserves a lot of credit for the directing of this movie. And as I said, the star of this movie is the motion capture technology acting and the CGI. And like I said, the fur on the apes, the eyes are lifelike. It's really amazing.
Did the action overwhelm the more character-driven moments in this movie?
No, I think Wes Ball, the director, balances those well. We have a lot of big set pieces. Like I said, there's fires, there's rivers, there's apes crossing rivers. There's apes on horseback, which is always still an amazing thing, I think, from that first film, watching apes riding horses. I think Freya Allen is really good as Nova, you know, the human that can talk, that surprises the apes because they view humans as subculture. They're feral. And there's still this thing that kind of permeates all the movies is that the apes can't quite believe there was a time when humans were running the show.
Right.
And that comes to fruition in those early films that we saw as kids. It's like, what? There's this past? Remember in the first film, 1968, Dr. Zaius keeps the secrets. He keeps the secrets from the apes that the humans once were in control. He knows Charlton Heston is from a different time, and he knows that he's a guy to be feared. He can handle that weapon. He's smart. He's Charlton Heston, right? And so Dr. Zaius was the keeper of the tablets, the keeper of the secrets. He doesn't want the apes to know that at one time they were in zoos, they were in jungles, and humans could talk. And that's kind of still permeates this, and I think it's setting up a pretty interesting sequel based on kind of a surprise ending you're going to get in this movie.
You touched on the music just a little bit earlier. I always ask you about it. Did you like the score for this movie?
Yeah, and as I said, they harken back a little bit to that Jerry Goldsmith score from the 1968 movie with Chuck Heston and Kim Hunter. So I always like the nod to the past because this all started with that amazing 1968 movie, which I think still holds up. And again, as we remember, Craig, that original movie has maybe one of the 10 best endings in movie history. And you know what I'm talking about, when Heston sees the Statue of Liberty. I mean, that's just an ending that no one can ever forget. Hard to top that one.
All right, Matt. You also wanted to revisit Roger Corman's life. He died last Thursday.
Yeah, he was 98, and this guy is an important person in movie history. He's the king of the B-movies, the king of pop movies. He finally got an honorary Oscar, even though he never had a sniff at an Oscar with the kind of movies he was making. He directed those Edgar Allan Poe adaptations with Vincent Price back in the 60s. But what he was known for was starting careers for other people. So if you worked for Roger Corman, Craig, you had 2 weeks to shoot the movie. Here's your budget. You better do this on time and on budget. That's how he worked. They were kind of like exploitation films like The Trip with Peter Fonda. That was a Corman film. Bloody Mama, you know, these kind of action exploitation films that Corman made, not really exploitation, but entertaining movies. And he gave Francis Ford Coppola his first film to direct.
Wow.
Scorsese with Boxcar Bertha. Ron Howard directed his first movie for Roger Corman. Jack Nicholson, Dennis Hopper, Peter Fonda. A lot of these actors got their starts in Roger Corman movies. So his reach is enormous in movie history. And my favorite line of all is when Ron Howard directed his first movie for him in like 1978. It was a car movie. And he wanted more time or more money to do the movie. And Corman said, "This is the budget, Ron. This is the schedule. And remember, if you do a good job, you'll never work for me again." And what he meant was, if you do a good job, you're going to go on to bigger and better things. Coppola went on to bigger and better things with
The
Godfather
films. He must
have done
a good job.
He did a good job. Exactly. I love that line by Corman.
Let's go to our trivia question of the week. Matt, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes mm-hmm. includes an actor who was nominated for an Oscar that locals probably remember.
William H. Macy as Jerry Lundegaard in Fargo.